Rorschach's Journal, March 7th, 2009. The accumulated talk of all their games and comics will foam up about their waist, and all the geeks and gamers will look up and shout, "Want to record a podcast?" And I'll look down and whisper,
"Hello and welcome to the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm Winmyun Kim.
And with us we have two guest hosts, returning guest host Mr. Sung Lee. How are you doing, Mr. Sung?
Very, 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 very not okay.
All right. And a brand new guest host, Mr. Andy Scheffler. We've actually had you on cue for quite a while, but it's taken six episodes till you showed up.
Oh, yeah, that's a really long time.
Yes. You need to have a comic book topic so you could bring in the comic book ringer.
I've thought about opening a comic book shop with Andy one of these days.
But you've also thought about opening a comic book shop with me as well.
Yeah.
I want to open a comic
book shop.
Only selling comic books that start with the letter S.
Spider-Man, Superman. Man.
Spirit.
Spirit. What else? Give us some, Andy.
Invincible.
Invincible.
Of course.
Go in there, of course.
Born.
Well, that's just obvious. All right. So our topic for this week is Snyder, Zack.
Yeah. So Mr. Zack Snyder, originally a commercial director for like Nike and Reebok, and eventually got his big break with Dawn of the Dead, the remake, and went on to 300, which was a huge hit. And now we're talking about The Watchmen. Oh, I'm sorry. Watchmen. And another big hit for him. So Mr. Snyder is quite the lucky young man.
He's getting attached to good projects.
He's getting attached to very good projects. And we're going to be discussing what we think about his latest project, Watchmen, later on in this episode. Let's go into a little bit of review about what he's been doing. So what do you guys think about this when I tell you this? Zack Snyder was originally a classmate with Michael Bay and Tarsem Singh, although I don't think most of you guys know Tarsem Singh, correct?
All I know is that it makes total sense.
Classmate as in what? What school?
They went to the same school.
Did they steal notes from each other? Because it seems like
high
it
school,
was
college.
No, no, no. Film school. Okay. Film school.
Well, okay.
It seems that,
like
that
they
makes sense. It's what they say. We're it's doing. Not what you know. It's who you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So yeah, they went to the same film school, and you can kind of get the same feeling that he kind of grew up with Michael Bay in some way, especially with a lot of the slow motion, which actually I think has become his signature at this point.
Which is sad, because I don't like it that much.
Yeah, I really don't like the slow motion. It actually bothers me more whenever I do see it. And not so much in 300, because, you know, that was, you know, I understood that that, you know, could have worked for that kind of material.
I think it worked for a comic book movie, in that it makes it seem like this is a frame of a comic book page, you know.
Right, because on a comic book, you can space out the action by showing, you know, shorter periods of time between each frame, but you can't do that in a movie because time is constant. So time's not constant. Slow it down.
All right. I mean, just this is the idea. Like, you know, Zack Snyder, he hasn't done very many films. In fact, I want to bring this up. He was also approached to do X-Men 3, which I still think, you know, he would have done a better job than Brett Ratner.
I didn't see X-Men 3. I'm
you don't really want
don't
to.
Need to.
Yeah,
I'm told it's one of those movies that doesn't exist. Just like Highlander 2, 3, and 4.
Superman's 4, Supergirl.
Yeah, a lot of those movies just never happened.
The only Captain America movie.
David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury.
Okay, wait, never mind. I didn't actually like the Captain America movie. I didn't even like its camp value.
Anyways, he was also approached to do Wolverine, but he turned that down in order to do Watchmen. The new Wolverine, I know we're going to be taking a look at it later on this year, but I mean, what do you think? Do you think he would have added anything different from what you've seen in these trailers?
He would have added a lot more slow motion. It would have been great for the Quicksilver movie. Eh? Maybe. Yeah,
I don't think Marvel's looking to do a Quicksilver movie anytime soon.
Yeah, but when that comes around, they'll have him on tap. It's like, hey, you do really good at making other things seem slow. Let's have a guy running fast in the middle of all that.
Well, do you think they would tie him to a Flash movie?
Yeah, exactly. He's already got a working relationship with DC.
That's true. Which Flash would you want him to do?
Anyone but Bart.
What?
I don't like Bart.
Oh, you're no longer my friend.
Oh, Geek Bite.
We can go into that sometime later on. His next project is actually a film called Sucker Punch, and it's about women in a mental institution looking to break out. It stars Amanda Seyfried, which I think most of you know for Mamma Mia at this point, but she was also in Veronica Mars, correct?
I don't know the actress.
She's that girl with the really bulging eyes.
So she's a female
Veronica
Christopher Walken?
Mars's friend that gets murdered in the very first season.
Is she a female Christopher Walken?
Okay, okay. No. Yeah, I know what you're talking about then.
Anyway, she's getting bigger, especially with Mamma Mia. But here's the other thing. This movie also has Vanessa Hudgens from High School Musical.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, they're starting to get individual roles now, are they?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if Zack Snyder can save this movie. I mean, he wrote this movie, Sucker Punch. It's coming out in 2010. I really don't know whether I'm going to be that excited about it. He has written before. I don't know if any of it's been successfully original stuff. In fact, actually, when I think about it, he's only done adaptations, really. I've seen in his credits that he's a screenwriter, but I think this movie, Sucker Punch, is actually the first time he's done screenwriting. So I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, Zack Snyder, that's a little background on him. Let's go into his very first hit, which was the Dawn of the Dead remake. So when I'm a big zombie movie fan, and the first time I heard about this movie, I really did not want them to make it, especially since they were not getting approval from George Romero.
Yeah, I had about the same opinion of it. I'd never actually watched it, though, because I'm a wuss, and I can't sit through horror movies because I just am not good at gore.
I grew up on horror movies, like all those bad B-movies from the 80s. And I probably have seen Dawn of the Dead at some point somewhere, but I don't remember it. And that's my experience from it.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to leave you two to talking about this because I have not seen.
Okay, so I've seen the original. I've seen the remake. And the remake is actually, you know, it's kind of different. It's a very, very entertaining zombie movie in which he also decides we're going to break the rules and all the zombies are going to move really fast. So these are the same kind of zombies you're now seeing in, like, Left 4 Dead and, you know, the new popular fast-moving zombie. And I would say it's very entertaining. It was not horrible, and I actually was having a good time when I saw it. So
it kept the message? That's the important part, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it didn't really keep the message. It just wanted to be a movie about people getting attacked by zombies, and they hide in a mall. Ving Rhames is in it, but other than that, it's like, it's very generic, but it is made with entertainment in mind first, and it does entertain.
The one thing that distinguishes that movie from other zombie movies for me is the fact that it has Mickey Pfeiffer in it, who I know from ER because I'm a big ER fan. And that's really about it. I've seen parts of it.
He has a very bad subplot in this movie.
I have seen the very, very, very end, and that's about it.
All right, let's move away from Dawn of the Dead. I don't really feel like that movie was much of a Zack Snyder signature movie, but this next one, 300, pretty much set his style in the public eye, and it was just a huge hit. I didn't expect 300 to do as well as it did.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah, it's very surprising.
It didn't actually surprise me. It looked like the kind of thing that Hollywood would go for when I first saw the previews for it.
But did you expect $70 million in opening weekend, especially for an R-rated movie?
Wow, yeah.
I would have expected like 40. I would have been like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Well, did it not open? I don't know what else
opened
that weekend.
It opened in March.
Wow. Yeah, but was it against anything else?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It was just I think it was just very good placement as well. And they're doing the same thing with Watchmen now.
But I think in general, those kind of types of gladiator movies always seem to do well in the box office.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about 300? I mean, I'm not a big fan of it. I didn't even like the book that much, and I read the book before the movie came out. I'm not really a big Frank Miller fan either.
That is the movie where I realized how horror fans can go through it, because that scene where the kid's head gets chopped off in really slow motion, I started giggling because it was just so strangely done. It's like, you know he's going to die because there are just rules about these things. Because, you know, he's basically gone off and said, I'm going to buy a boat and I'm retiring in 3 days. And, you know, so you know it's coming from a mile away. Everyone in the movie knows it's coming from a mile away. Everyone in the theater knows it's coming from a mile away. And then when it actually happens, it's just so silly.
Yeah, it's like, I can't remember. I think it's called Rikkyo.
Rikkyo?
The Japanese fighting movie where heads explode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that, where it's just comedy when it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned head exploding. I can't help but think of Scanners.
Ah, yes. That's the most well-known one. For 300, I thought it was very pretty to look at, despite the fact that it's all guys and, you know, running around, but basically, you know, very little clothes on.
So Dom found it pretty, too.
Well, I didn't think it was homoerotic enough. I didn't think it went far enough. It should have had more dangly.
Yes.
Yeah, but you see, Snyder wanted to follow up with more dangly next
week. He learned his lesson.
He did learn his lesson.
And by the way, I did attempt to watch Meet the Spartans, which...
Oh my god,
why?
Really?
Why did you do that?
Wow.
Why would you do that to yourself, son?
For some reason, I just like the idea of just checking out a bad movie just to see how bad it is.
And Wait, did you pay money for Meet the Spartans? Okay.
I really don't think he would.
But, I mean, I've seen a lot of those spoof movies, and it's just like, for that core group of people who ever make these spoof movies, every movie they come out with is just been getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, because they're not even waiting for the material to come out. They're just going, looking at the trailer and saying, hey, I took a part from the trailer. And they didn't even, like, make a parody of those things anymore. It's just, hey, we put it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, and some of these, it's just they're coming out with the new one, like whatever the one was. It's like superhero movie.
Exactly.
The newest one was the disaster movie. And it has like an Enchanted spoof right there on the cover. It's like, it was just, well, this movie happened to come out recently. Let's throw it in the most recent one.
Yeah. I remember when that movie came out, it even had like spoofs on Hancock and things like that. And I was like, that movie's not even out yet. You're spoofing a movie that you don't even know what it's about, really. Well, okay. I'm sure they knew what it was about, but it didn't even come out, so there's not, like, material that you can really parody from it.
And even then, the people just wouldn't get really the joke.
Oh, yeah, you know, to them, the joke would be, oh, it's Hancock!
From the movie! I know that movie!
Yeah, what's the next movie you're gonna include in this movie? Yeah, anyways,
Name that tune for morons.
So we're moving away from our Zack Snyder topic. Actually, that's anything else you want to talk about? Dawn of the Dead 300? Just Zack Snyder himself? Because really, this was about Watchmen.
Yeah, let's get to Watchmen.
All right, so Watchmen, we've all seen it.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it in IMAX. The rest of you saw it in standard, right?
Well, okay.
You saw IMAX as well, right?
Technically, it was supposed to be IMAX. It was a DLP on a normal theater, which is kind of gypped. And they charge you IMAX prices, which is a gyp.
What? So I was wondering, that theater doesn't have an IMAX screen.
That's what
I was wondering, like, all of a sudden they said they have IMAX playings. I was like, did they build it and it never made the building look any bigger?
it was a regular theater. And of course, like, I actually posted what happened at the screening. There's a lot of bad things that happened during that screening. That was very entertaining. And we also got a free movie ticket out of it, but...
So what was this bad thing? I've been hearing about it. The listeners would love to hear about it.
Can't leave them hanging.
All right. So here's what happened. I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, so I'll just say that there's a certain scene that happens in the Archimedes between two of the main characters, and if you were ever to pause the movie at a certain point, it would be that time. And that is where the movie just suddenly freezes. For several seconds.
And then
the picture jitters up and down, causing the entire audience to laugh incredibly loudly. And then the screen goes black for about 5 minutes. I decided to go to the bathroom at this time, come back, and they're replaying the movie from the very beginning.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. And apparently they had a couple of restarts while I was in the bathroom. And so after it plays the beginning, they kind of skip through the chapters, basically, like you're skipping through a DVD. And we get to the point where it's about a minute before the freeze happens, the original freeze happens. And then they skip further ahead, and we see spoilers. Skip further ahead, so we see more spoilers. And
so they just missed where you were in the movie?
Well, no, I mean, and then eventually they had finally gotten back to that point. And yeah, it was just a very amusing experience, and I didn't miss any of the movie. I actually got to re-watch parts of the movie that I may have forgotten about, but it was an interesting experience.
All right, I mean, that theater before, I had watched, I went to go watch Rocky Balboa. They had a trailer for Ghost Rider ahead of it, and what happened was the Ghost Rider trailer, you know, Ghost Rider is a terrible movie, I'll tell you that, I've seen it, and like the trailer actually is a lot cooler than the movie. The trailer ends. And then it goes to the next trailer, which I think is for Ocean's 13, the very beginning of it. Then the frame freezes, And then we watch the entire film catch on fire and disintegrate. Oh, so I was thinking to myself, man, they just missed their cue. They were supposed to disintegrate right after Ghost Rider. Because then that would have been perfect.
Then it would have made the movie actually seem good.
It would have been like, whoa, I was not expecting that.
It's a great trick, but you can only do it once.
So anyways, all right, I want to go back into the – let's talk about Watchmen movie. Every one of you, you get one word you want to say to describe how you feel about this Watchmen movie that you just saw yesterday. We all saw it yesterday or today. I think you guys saw it today. Mm-hmm. Anyways, what's your one word?
Can I use two? No.
I know what your word is going to be then.
Fake Batman.
All right, fake. Two words is fine. Just fake, a catchphrase. Yeah, fake something Batman. Simpler. Fake Batman.
Tall order.
I see. I would have expected Dom to mention that.
Wing.
And for me, would be slow motion. So.
So you didn't even have a single word either. You had a hyphen.
Mine was going to be Wang. Oh. Anyways, okay, let's talk about this because I know I've been seeing in like a ton of message boards, comments on blogs. The one thing everyone is talking about is Dr. Manhattan's special something. And I'm just like, we're not even discussing. You know, we've been waiting
nuclear
years
package.
For. We've been waiting years for this movie to finally come out.
We can talk about his nuclear whistle.
And the only thing that everyone wants to talk about now is the Wang.
I just wanted to make one joke about it and be done with it, honestly.
Yeah, to me, it wasn't distracting. I mean, it's a penis. At least all of us at this table have seen it. I've seen one or two before in our lives.
Mine's not blue.
I thought I was watching Anaconda.
So yeah, like any, do you feel like you're gonna hear so much about this penis more than people talking about the actual movie?
I feel like I'll be seeing this penis in pictures on the internet forever.
Well, okay,
Photoshop everywhere.
Because this is becoming kind of a trend of showing it more and more because, I believe it's, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes,
she had three scenes.
We see penis in that. We see penis in Sex and the City as well.
And also, I didn't know that,
And the reader, also, we see a penis in the reader.
What's it called? I was going to say Zack and Miri.
Oh, yes, we see penis there, yes. Too.
I'm okay with this.
I don't really care either.
Yeah. It's also computer-generated, so it's not technically a
penis.
Well,
I mean, like, the idea is that, you know, R-rated movies, go ahead, show a penis. It's not like anyone's going
to
get it.
Well, yeah, but that line used to not be crossed. You cross that line, it becomes
exactly.
Rated X.
Yes.
In Forgetting Sarah Marshall, the extras, they talked extensively about the rating systems in regards to the flaccid penis versus a more erect penis. And if you're interested in that, just listen to those. Just buy the DVD and look at the extras.
And it's also a very good movie, so
yeah.
I would recommend that. So actually, an erect penis is an X. I mean, NC-17, but
yes.
A flaccid one.
Yes.
So for a woman, now, there's nothing to make those any, you know, a woman like doing full frontal nudity, it's not, and nothing's going to make it any different. So
yeah,
why is it
no.
Like, you know, a guy's full frontal nudity if he's just excited that, you know, it's any different?
It's really arbitrary. I mean, you know the rating, the history
of the
rating system.
Yeah, the MPAA has been so stupid about a lot of ratings.
At least we're not in the Hays Code still.
That's true.
I mean, the thing about the rating is there's not rules. It's
just what they think.
They watch the movie, or even in some cases, they're just told what the movie contains.
That's true.
They may not even see the final cut, and then they decide what the rating is.
It's just so arbitrary.
It's very arbitrary.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, that's pretty much the end of the Wang talk.
Yeah, we're
thank God.
Hopefully we're not going to talk about this for the rest of the podcast. Right, guys?
Right.
Right.
Thank you.
So let's go into this. A lot of big names have actually been attached to Watchmen before we got to Zack Snyder. So let's go really early on, back in the early days when Warner Brothers loved a little guy called Joel Silver, who brought us The Matrix and a whole bunch of other crap afterwards. Joel Silver doing Watchmen, yay or nay?
Nay.
Nay.
Nay, right?
Nay.
That's correct. Okay.
Wait,
instead of slow motion, we'd get bullet time.
Oh,
And he
God.
Also fired Josh Whedon.
Where would the
from
bullets be from? I'm going to go into this. If you have not seen Watchmen or read Watchmen, we're going to go into spoilers. I don't care.
Like, yeah.
You've gone since 1986 to read Watchmen, so there's no excuse at this point. And if you haven't seen the movie, you can also read the book, which is, you know, I hear the movie is based off of. So we're going into spoiler territory. bullet time, what, like when comedian tries, when the comedian shoots that pregnant Vietnamese girl? Is that going to be bullet time? See, that's what I'm thinking. Like, that's Joel Silver's Watchmen.
Right at the end, there would have been a perfect bullet time.
I thought
it kind of given away some of the spoiler. But
you talking about like whenever someone gets exploded, they bullet time around the explosion?
Ooh.
No, that's stupid. Trust me.
That's really stupid. They could bullet time being thrown out of a window, except that, oh wait, they did.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Okay, so Joel Silver, not really the greatest name to associate to Watchmen. Terry Gilliam as director. I would actually be interested in seeing that.
I would be interested in seeing it, but I would be nervous about it.
It wouldn't be nearly as faithful an adaptation as this version
was. Yeah, I would think it would be his kind of stylized version.
Because I've actually talked to Neil Gaiman before about how Terry Gilliam wanted to adapt Good Omens. And he was talking about how they would try to script that entire first scene with the baby switching. And Terry Gilliam's idea was like, let's have arrows pointing at each baby. And you think about that and you go, that sounds incredibly stupid. And so, you know,
I can picture that.
You can picture that, but it sounds incredibly stupid, though. Hmm. It would just be, you know, it would be a very awkward thing, you know?
Yeah, but that whole opening sequence, it's very slapstick as it is already.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Good Omens. We're a little digressing.
Well, we're just talking about the Terry Gilliam style, where it's just really, it's way out there and it's out from what you would expect. And so, you know, it would be interesting, but I don't know if I would instantly go, oh, I'm watching that movie.
And he's going to automatically have to impose the theme that he puts on everything he does, which is this reality or is this imagination? And that does not apply to Watchmen at all. That's so off the message.
All right. So Terry Gilliam, I would say like what a in the middle, but more towards nay, correct?
Towards nay.
Yes.
I would be interested, but not necessarily excited.
Wouldn't want to use the make of the movie of Watchmen on a Terry Gilliam version. Much rather have something more faithful.
Yeah. Okay, now let's bring up some other new names. Darren Aronofsky has been attached to this project before as well.
Okay, you'll have to give me a refresher course on who that is.
Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, The Fountain.
Wow.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. I think he could have done it.
I think he could have
I don't think he could have gotten the funding to do it the way he would want to do it. He is very particular, and he's not, you know, a box office draw. Let's think about it. None of his movies has been a huge box office hit.
No, you're right.
And, you know, Watchmen, even though the material itself is something you could just do as easily with, you know, just some regular actors on some plain sets, it still is one of those kind of titles that everyone in Hollywood, you know, even if they don't know what it is, they'll think it's a comic book movie and you'd have a huge budget for it, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, I mean, if you look at a lot of these recent comic book movies, and a lot of the movies have been from directors who have been doing these smaller movies, like, and I can't think of the name, but the Iron Man director.
Oh, Jon Favreau.
Yeah, Jon Favreau.
Or even
Batman.
Yeah, or even Christopher Nolan going to do Batman, or even Bryan Singer going on to do X-Men.
Yeah.
And now we have, we have Kenneth Branagh doing Thor.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
Which could be interesting and could be horrible, but
as long as he doesn't cast himself in Thor, I think it'll be all right. Because have you seen Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet? It is so self-indulgent. It is so terrible.
The man loves the sound of his voice.
He could do a pretty good Thor, just not with directing himself.
Yeah. He can't direct himself.
All right. Final name attached as a director to Watchmen, although earlier I said Joel Silver, he was the producer. Paul Greengrass.
Okay, refresher course.
Yeah.
The Bourne trilogy, United 93.
I would have gotten motion sick watching Watchmen.
That's true. Yeah, but if you ask me, like, who's very good at the, you know, the shaky cam, he's probably the best.
He's probably the best, but that just means, you know, who's, out of all of these cheeses, which makes Dom the least sick?
Oh, okay. But I mean, at least from what you know from his movies, yeah, I think he would have been really capable of doing this.
He can make a really good movie, it's
and
true.
And he would have been able to get the funding, as you said before.
Yeah, it would definitely have been a very different style, though.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would be a lot more fly on the wall, very gritty, not pretty even. Like, just lots of
Well, I'm okay
colors.
With it not being, you know, very pretty. It's just that it wouldn't have been very easy to watch for those 3 hours. Because there's one thing to watching a 90-minute, you know, movie in shaky cam. There's another thing to be watching a 160-minute movie in shaky cam.
Well, one thing to consider, though, is as we're watching the Watchmen movie, not a lot of it is actually action.
Most of it is
dialogue and flashbacks.
I was actually very glad about that. Although I want to get into that point. Anytime there was a chance for action, they over-actioned it, especially when I think about the comic book. Like, even the killing of the comedian, that's not even – that's barely in the comic. And it's like 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, it's five minutes of the movie versus, you know, like 2 frames of the comic in the first
page. They had narration over it.
Yeah.
So it was technically, well, like so many things in the comic book, it was one of many things happening at the same time simultaneously.
That's true.
And I think they did need to inject some action into it because the casual viewer, I mean, even I was reading some reviews of it online and people were saying, I'm on board. There's like no action. There's nothing. It's boring. They're just talking.
I got to tell you, my theater, there were people that got up in the middle of the movie to go to the bathroom. There were people checking their cell phones. This was a Friday night, 7 p.m. show at an IMAX screen. Like, you had to order these tickets at least 2 weeks earlier. You're not getting in. And I was just shocked. But you know, I also expected, you know, the general population is not going to be too enamored by this. I think it doesn't lend itself to being a blockbuster. And it's being marketed so much in that whole 300 kind of range.
Right.
The trailer is pretty much all action.
Yeah.
Which is weird, yeah.
So, anyway, you know, that's my biggest problem with it. It's tried so much to try to be action and try to be that, you know, that cool action that we're used to with Zack Snyder.
The soundtrack was really schizophrenic, too. I mean, it had the really serene, slow, you know, Bob Dylan, Unforgettable, you know, All Along the Watchtowers. You know, I really liked that half of the soundtrack.
I did not like the use of All Along the Watchtower at all. I thought it was out of place.
Well, the ones that I found out of place were pretty much anything that happened during an action scene where it sounded like a Hollywood action scene. Anything with, like, really driving guitar. Any, like, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. You know? That felt out of place.
But I thought the orchestration during the final scene was just very subtle
strings.
That was perfect. Like, you didn't even notice it was there until
it came to a climax.
Like when they play 99 balloons. I don't know. I don't know.
Oh yeah, the Nina.
No balloons.
Yeah, it was like, wow, they're playing this.
Which is the thing is that that's the most appropriate song they used in the whole thing because it's about nuclear war.
Yes, it is.
No. The most appropriate song is the opening number from Bob Dylan.
Oh, the times are a changing.
I saw that the early preview at WonderCon, that sold me on this movie.
Well, that was actually referenced in the book, wasn't
it? Yes, of course. Which is why I was like that, and also a lot of those scenes in that sequence are all those in between text portions, or even an adaptation of what they thought would have happened based upon the text in between the chapters of the book. So I loved that. It sold me. And then the rest of the movie did not really so much.
Yeah. One other thing I just have to mention about the soundtrack was there's one scene and the song playing in the background is Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Which is funny.
It's funny. And it was
during the Ozymandias scene, right?
Yes.
By the way, another thing for people, I believe you should read the original sonnet that Ozymandias' character takes his name from. I believe it's Shelley. I think it's Shelley.
You're the English major.
I'll have to pull it off of my shelf. But you really should read it. It's only 14 lines long, people. Read it.
14 lines.
I know, there's no pictures, right?
But
you should
read
it.
The first line.
Is that a haiku?
So we've talked about who was originally attached. And we know, you know, Zack Snyder, I can say he did as good a job as I would have expected, maybe a little better than I expected from him.
Yeah.
But who would you want to direct a Watchmen movie? And don't say Michael Bay.
I wouldn't.
Even as a joke. Even as a joke, because it's not funny.
What director would I want? Well, as a joke, I could make you angry and want to punch me. And you know what I'm going to say?
The same director as Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
I can't even remember his name. He's some like Slavic area director or something like that.
Oh, you're
going
to say Uwe Boll.
No. Even worse. I was going to say McGee.
No. McGee is doing that Terminator movie.
I know.
And if it's terrible, then yes, I will always leave him. But McGee, he produces Chuck.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's a pure action director. I don't want that. True. I would want...
He would have changed the script.
Yeah.
And the theory is, let's talk, actually, before we go into who we would want to direct this movie, because I know I popped this question on you guys just immediately, let's go into the script. David Hayter, voice of Solid Snake.
Alex Tsay.
Yeah. And, well, let's talk about David Hayter did the, you know, this screenplay has gone through like
so
half
many.
A dozen people,
yeah.
Maybe even a dozen people at this point. David Hayter has usually been credited as the person that kept the most faithful to the original source material.
Yep.
And, you know, he had his script. It went off to other people to do rough drafts. Alex Tsay did the current one that we're seeing.
Yeah.
But David Hayter is also credited because he took a lot of Alex Tsay took a lot of material from David Hayter's script to try to keep as faithful as possible and also kind of market to the regular general population. So what did you think about David Hayter's adaptation? I mean, I thought it was actually pretty close.
Yeah, it kept pretty close. And the thing is that the things that they couldn't do in the medium, they changed. You know, various things like... And also, you know, they changed parts that just wouldn't make very much sense to modern audiences, like no squid.
Oh, but like, yes, well, technically there was a squid, remember?
Yeah, the acronym for the thing that he was making was squid. However, there was no giant monster that arrived in the middle of, you know. Watchmen was a product of its era, and they have to keep that in mind for that. I mean, that's one of the huge things that didn't work about V for Vendetta. V for Vendetta came out of the same era as Watchmen, the Cold War, the nuclear scare, and it just didn't translate very well.
Well, because they didn't keep it a period piece.
They didn't keep it a period piece, and they tried to update it to the modern terrorism era. And so Watchmen, they made sure that you remembered what it was like in the 80s with nuclear war actually threatening. You know, you didn't, it wasn't as imminent as it was in, say, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, but it was there and it was scary and people thought about this constantly.
Duck and cover.
Yeah. And so one of the things the script did a really good job of was reminding you through the TV, through
the newspaper, through
the entire atmosphere of the place that, hey, look, we're in a world where at any moment, millions of people could die because someone pressed a button. And they really did a really good job of expressing that, you know, with the President Nixon scenes, with all of that. And so in that way, the screenplay really succeeded in adapting it and not just aping it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Earlier, I just said David Hayter's adaptation. I have to also say Alex Tsay, who, you know, probably was the voice that said, hey, we should go back to Hayter's material. Any other thoughts on the screenplay from you guys? I mean,
well, there were a lot of times where I was watching and the dialogue was exact enough, if not
perfectly exact.
That, you know, it was as I remembered, and my memory's not 100%, but I'm going like, this is pretty much exactly as it is in the book, which is always awesome to see it acted and see it actually work.
And the changes they made, we sort of went, okay, that works.
Especially there's that one really fanboy change in which they do show you the scene where Rorschach says, I'm not locked in here with you, you're locked in here with me, because that's originally... Yeah.
It's a narration.
Yeah, it's part of a narration from the psychiatrist that Rorschach has been speaking to.
Where he's just sitting there and
exactly.
thinks it.
And that was a very, very cool scene.
That was a cool scene.
I'm pretty sure everybody loved that scene.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they captured the essence of that.
Of it really well.
The whole, everything in the prison was just so spot on.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I have a question about the prison scene, because this was pretty much the only point that really confused me, which was there's various intercuts between Rorschach in the prison, and then suddenly when you get back to it, it's a prison riot, and everyone's loose and running around. Was that explained in the comics, or...
Well, they just plan it.
Yeah, it was... Everyone who was in there was like, it's now our turn, we're going to get Rorschach, let's break out of our cells so we can get to him and kill him.
Because he put all of us in here, yeah. Explained more, but they explain it enough to make it believable in the movie.
Yeah.
They don't really get hard into it.
They basically imply it, but they don't say that's what happened.
Yeah, they have to use implication a lot of times. There's just not enough time to explain everything out.
Even in 160 minutes, there wasn't enough time. And they did well, I think.
Because the sheer amount of text that's in the original book, not just counting the dialogue balloons, but all the background material.
I have to explain my affiliation with the comics, which is I never really read the comics. I grew up with an older brother who collected comics, and he actually collected the original single issues of the comic, and he loved the series. I kind of flipped through it, and I'm like, this is not X-Men. Okay, put it down. Literally. And so...
Well, how old were you at the time?
Like, maybe 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, you're not nearly old enough to read Watchmen.
I read Watchmen for the first time at 12, and I went, this is really weird. But the villain wins at the end. That's cool. And then I got a little older, and I read it again. I'm like, oh, I get it now. It's the 80s. It's capturing the essence of the 80s here. It's about, you know, it's about this, it's about that. Okay, I get it. Then I got a little older than that, and I studied Watchmen for one of my English classes. That was a really fun class, visual culture. Just looking in comic books and into the background to see, you know, what they're telling you without actually telling you things. I did Transmit for that, for my senior thesis. That was a good one. But anyway, and so, you know, I went, okay, now I understand a lot more of this, and I enjoy it a lot more, you know?
Yes, and I have, like, I do want to actually look and read the comic, but I did like turn to a page and it's just dialogue bubbles covering like
almost there's a lot to read. It's very dense
of the page.
By the way, when you're done with the pictures, let's just give you text without the pictures.
Oh yeah. I remember when I was in high school, I was reading it, and I was like, I can't read these in-between portions. Already I'm reading too much in the comic portions.
That's one thing, like I said, that the movie did a really good job of, was people would be watching TV, and you'd catch a snippet of it, and then it would be going in the background, so you would still be absorbing the atmosphere without actually having to read through an entire Time article.
Yeah, it goes back to the whole simultaneous narrative that the comic book has everywhere that actually managed to do some of that in the movie.
And it did a lot better than, say, when the Hulk movie by Ang Lee tried to do that.
It was literally simultaneous.
Yeah.
The Chun-Li voiceovers.
Let's not get into that. Sung, you've said a bad word. Now we have to label this podcast explicit.
So let me go back to my original question, which was, who would you like to actually see direct this movie? And I can say, you can go ahead and say if you want it to be Zack Snyder. I think it's valid to say that Zack Snyder would be your choice. But, I mean, really, just a dream choice. Who do you think should do it?
Ooh, that's a toughie. But
if I was doing it in a vacuum, like not having seen this version, which was probably about as good as you could get, I would have said Kevin Smith just because.
Interesting.
That would be an interesting movie.
Because he loves the material.
He would have captured the essence of people standing around talking to each other.
But it's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
He understands the medium. He's, I would assume, familiar with the work to the depth at which you'd want the person to be familiar with it. It would definitely have been a different movie, but I think it would have been a very interesting watch.
So here's the thing. My choice is actually, and I feel very cliche saying it, but he's a man that can take non-action, like anything without really that much action and still make it very interesting. And I thought it would be really cool if we would ever be able to see Martin Scorsese's Watchmen. Because you know he does crime stories very well, and in the end, this is still a detective story. I mean, at least for the upfront, not talking about what's going on behind the scenes, but I still think in terms of a person that can capture people speaking and trying to kind of let the viewer know the story without giving away too much, I think he's very capable of doing it.
True.
Yeah, we were just talking earlier, and Dom's got pretty interesting for a choice.
You know who I would actually really have liked doing it is Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, if he did Rear Window style, you know, from that sense of paranoia, that sense of being on the outside looking in, you know, like that sense of mystery is what would do really well. Yeah.
You know, this actually brings up another thing. You were talking about the whole Cold War scare, and I can't believe I just thought about this. You know, they even reference Dr. Strangelove as the war. Okay. Stanley Kubrick could have been awesome doing Watchmen. He's just of that same kind of mind. Like, you feel like him and Alan Moore together would be like best friends.
Or they'd kill each other.
Yeah, exactly.
They would either be best friends or they would kill each other.
It probably would have been the one adaptation Alan Moore would have actually
gotten behind. Especially when you think about that, you know, Stanley Kubrick, he's a Full Metal Jacket. You know, he's done the Vietnam era kind of stuff. He's done very science fiction with 2001. He's done some very crazy things with Shining. It's almost like it would have been perfect for him.
Yeah, he had to go and waste it on AI.
Oh, we get so depressed just mentioning last projects to
AI.
Each other. But it was his last project. Would you have?
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
hey, it's still a better last project than Eyes Wide Shut.
It's a better last project than Eyes Wide Shut. It's true. And it's a better last project than either of Transformers the movie or Street Fighter the movie. That's probably true.
So, Sung,
what do you think?
Who do you think?
Honestly, I don't know. I was actually very happy with the Zack Snyder version of the film.
Zack Snyder's version of the film was the one that you can see.
The directors I could think of off the top of my head would have made an interesting version of it, but since I don't really know the source material that well, I can't really... I never really imagined what it would have been like, so I can't think of how other people would have interpreted the original source.
That's fair.
Oh, I was waiting for you to say Joss Whedon.
Oh, no.
That would be very interesting.
Then we would have people dying at random in the middle just to prove that there's a masked killer. It's like the silhouette would still be alive and you'd meet her and talk to her for like a good 45 minutes and then she'd just get shot for being a lesbian.
Oh, my God.
Well, that is why she got shot.
It's just that,
you know, he would make it more obvious. It's like... You got shot because you're a lesbian. Ha 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 ha. And then that would be it.
Okay, moving on. Yeah. I've compiled a list of different
communists?
People that were originally attached to play certain roles. So let's go through these characters.
Clark Duncan in there?
No.
Thank goodness.
Okay, so let's go to Dr. Manhattan. And I think this is probably the most talked about attached role, which was Keanu Reeves was originally taught. There was talk, and let's just say none of these roles were ever actually officially attached, but there were talks, especially of Keanu Reeves playing Dr. Manhattan for this adaptation of Watchmen as well, the Zack Snyder one.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here, put my reputation at stake here, and say that there are projects that I've really liked Keanu Reeves in more serious roles. He can do that slightly unhinged kind of feel. If you've seen, going back to Kenneth Branagh, his version of Much Ado About Nothing, Keanu Reeves is in that. And I like him in that. I think he could do it. However, I think that Billy Crudup did a very good job.
Yeah, I would have to say Billy Crudup did do quite a nice job
with it. Yes, he did. And he definitely, if you look at the comics, he definitely looks the part, although I'm sure... I know that they did do some CG work.
The casting on this was really good. Almost all of the characters.
The main cast that I had a problem with was Night Owl.
Really? I had a big problem with Silk Spectre.
So did I.
Yes, same here.
I just really felt she could not fit in with the rest of them. But then you have to think about this too. Alan Moore doesn't really write the female roles that well.
Notoriously.
You're talking about Silver Spectre 2.
The second...
Okay.
The first Silk Spectre, her casting was fine. She's supposed to be old.
She's old
elf. She had to play a young and old, so she had to
That's true. But anyway, so let's go on to the
Actually,
next
let's go back. So we're still on Dr. Manhattan.
Okay, yeah. Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
Joel Silver, and this is the sole reason why you should not want Joel Silver to ever do a Watchmen movie, wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger to play Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, my. Arnold Schwarzenegger as an ex-physicist?
That would be even worse than Denise Richards as a nuclear physicist for The World's Not Enough, right?
Correct.
Yes. I'll just say
that was one of the worst castings of a physicist of all time.
I'll just say this about Billy Crudup doing a Dr. Manhattan, which is his voice kind of bothered me. The fact that it was very plain, right?
Yeah.
Plain.
Well, I liked him being really soft-spoken. That's how I imagined the character.
Yeah, I definitely got used to it. And it's just seeing a picture of him and then hearing that voice, you just wouldn't have thought. At least I didn't.
That's fair. That's fair.
Last one that I have on the list for Dr. Manhattan. Joaquin Phoenix was once attached to this role.
I can see that.
And I can see this.
I don't know if he has really enough of the jawline for it.
He definitely doesn't have the stature, but I could definitely see him emoting as Dr. Manhattan
pretty well. Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know his work that well, so.
Okay, let's go on to, I have a list for Ozymandias. This is actually the second most well-known attachment, which was Jude Law to play Ozymandias.
That could have worked.
And I totally believe it would have worked.
Yes.
Let's go on to the next few, Lee Pace, although I don't think many of you guys know him. He was in Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, I don't know him.
Okay. Tom Cruise was once attached as Ozymandias. I don't know if it was for the Joel Silver version. I really don't think it could have worked.
I don't think it could have worked either.
That would have been a major negative point on me watching this movie.
I think it would have depended on the rest of the cast if it would have worked at all.
Yeah.
Because he is very much, if you see Tom Cruise, you'll see Tom Cruise.
Yeah, you know? That's the thing, is that would be where the actor took over instead of the character.
Yeah.
All right, and the final one I have for Ozymandias is Daniel Craig was once attached to play Ozymandias as well. And I believe this is before he became James Bond.
Yeah, I think he's too
thick. Just before. Yes, I don't think
he's too craggy. Yeah.
He actually feels like he would have fit in a different role than Ozymandias.
I think he would have made a decent, like, comedian or something like that, Someone with that more gruff, craggy look to him.
All right. Speaking of the comedian, the only one I have on my list as previously attached, and I think you guys will like this, Ron Perlman was once attached to play the comedian.
Yeah.
I had heard some other names, but I can't think of them off the top of my head. But yeah, Ron Perlman, he's been good in pretty much every movie I've seen him in.
He didn't do that well in Hellboy 2, but that's a personal thing.
Okay.
No, I thought he makes a perfect Hellboy.
He makes a perfect Hellboy, but Hellboy 2 just wasn't a very good movie.
Okay, so let's talk about, since I had a big problem with Silk Spectre, and I don't know how long ago this attachment was made. Sigourney Weaver had once wanted I believe it was for the first Silk Spectre, the second one.
To be.
Because we have to remember that the second Silk Spectre in this story is like 15 or 16.
No, she's
16 older. When she meets Dr.
She's
Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she has to be able to play younger as for the majority of the events.
Yeah, but even like in the movie, she's what, like 18, 19 by that point?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's about 3 years into their relationship.
Okay.
But Sigourney Weaver as the old Silk Spectre, I could have believed that.
As the older Silk Spectre, sure, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Night Owl. The only person I have on my list was John Cusack had once said he wanted to be Night Owl.
As long as John Cusack gained about 20 pounds, I could believe him as the Silk Spectre, as the Night Owl. I'm sorry.
Slip up there.
Yeah, I could have believed him as the Night Owl. I mean, he's got that neurosis down, that sort of sense that he's a lesser being, sitting around with people who are more important than him. He's got that quiet desperation really down, and I could see that.
So my final one, which is for Rorschach, and I don't know how this got attached at one point, but originally Rorschach was supposed to be played by Simon Pegg.
So here's the thing. I think it was because he was redheaded.
And I really think it was because...
At that point, you might as well just have Carrot Top playing Rorschach.
I would have expected somewhere Hollywood would say, hey, can we get Ron Howard to play Rorschach? But anyways, let's talk about who we actually got then. Rorschach played by Jackie Earle Haley.
Perfect.
Yes.
He was awesome.
And the thing is, most people did not know him before. He did get a supporting actor nomination for Little Children, which most people just pretty much ignored.
Yeah.
And when I heard he was originally cast, he was the only name out of the list. Well, actually, Billy Crudup I had known before too. But the only name I was excited about, because I actually felt that he could play this role very well. He had already played a very creepy role to begin with. So I think we were all pretty much in agreement. He was the best in terms of playing the role that they were assigned, right? Out of the six.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's hard to not say that he wasn't the most likable as well, especially since he is the most likable character.
Yes. Well, it's funny that he's the most likable because he's a sociopath.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go into this. We've talked about Silk Spectre, the second one. I did not like her. And my main reasons is that every single time she's speaking with somebody, it always feels very unnatural.
Yeah.
And actually, I IMDb'd her, and I was looking at her past roles, and she hasn't really done much, at least as far as I could tell. She did have one major starring role for a movie called The Heartbreak Kid.
This is the sad thing
for
me.
Oh, wow. The Ben Stiller movie?
Yeah, the Ben Stiller movie.
The sad thing for me is that every review of Watchmen I've seen mentions her and says, she looks really good in spandex. It's like, that's not the point.
No, she actually doesn't, though. Her body doesn't really fit that well.
Yeah, it's like either they made the costume wrong for her, or they made her wrong for the costume, or...
they made her wrong for the costume?
it felt like they had a costume in mind, and they tried to compress her to fit into it.
Right.
And it just didn't look that good.
Because she actually... And she does look good. I have seen some of her other roles before, and she does look very, very pretty. Just in this movie, she just doesn't.
She looks kind of plain.
Yeah,
like, I actually think that the first Silk Spectre, the older one, her mother,
yeah,
the actress that plays her, like she looks spot on as original Silk Spectre.
Well, the hair goes a long way.
Yes, exactly. And they definitely got the costume very much
all the costumes
to the pages.
Yeah.
So let's move on from Silk Spectre. We've talked about Dr. Manhattan. There's some issues with his voice, but you know, I still think Billy Crudup did
he was the best
he could.
Yeah.
He can't really change his voice without, I guess, it feeling a bit.
We represent the Lollipop Guild.
Anyways, Night Owl. I know you had an issue with this, Dom.
With
the actor that played Night Owl.
Well, this is the thing, is that he made too convincing of an action hero. And the entire point of Night Owl is that he's out of the game. He's pretty pathetic. He's desperate to be, you know, important again. And this guy just looked kind of like, you know what, he reminded me of Paul Rudd, of all people. He looked like Paul Rudd.
Ooh.
Yeah, he looked like Paul Rudd as an action hero. And so he had, like, a little too much charisma. He had a little too much presence. He had a little too little fat, you know.
Yeah, he needed a pot belly.
He needed sort of more of that quiet desperation, like I said, that John Cusack would have brought to the role, where he's a has-been. And he just never really got across to us that he was a has-been in that role.
Oh, he kind of did before I found out that he was Night Owl.
So let's talk about Ozymandias and the comedian. I really don't think anyone pretty much had a problem with either of them. They both filled in their roles.
They both filled their roles quite well.
Fine. Yes. Nothing really wowed me about either one.
The interesting thing was the translation from the comic to the movie of the Ozymandias'
costume.
Yeah.
Wasn't he like bright blue? And...
No.
He had a lot of like purple drapes.
That's right.
Everything was purple. Everything was purple, green, and orange.
You're right.
Secondary colors.
Actually, one of the things I remember from the WonderCon panel was people were asking why his costume in the movie had nipples.
Yeah, the bat nipples.
Yeah,
well, he pretty much has the Batman armor on.
Yes, and the way Zack Snyder explained it was the fact that his costume in the movie is very, very butch. And if you compare that to the comics, he had to put in something to tone it down a little so he had the nipples. I think that was probably a joke, but... Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I always thought of it as them trying to just do a parody on the Batman and Robin costumes themselves, especially since like
it did look a lot like the Robin costume,
the most commercialized of all of the characters. I thought it was just some sort of thing there. Let's go into the final question. I had you guys prepare for this beforehand. What is the best comic book to either TV or movie adaptation in your opinion? So, Andy, I mean, what do you think?
I thought this was the top five one. I guess I could choose what was number one on my list, which was The Dark Knight.
All right.
That was, under the assumption I did this list before watching Watchmen, so.
So I know you had prepared a top five. What were your five through two then? Just curious.
So, well, I was going to say for number five would have been Ghost World.
Yeah, I was expecting
you to have Ghost World somewhere.
My Ghost World would be around number two, yeah.
And then, let's see, I had it written down, but I can probably get off the top of my head.
I'll say my five while he's looking that up.
Okay.
I didn't have a five, so.
My five was Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2, interesting.
Four was Sin City. Three is Superman 2. And one and two, I'm kind of vacillating because I'm still kind of trying, basically digesting Watchmen, and I had to read the comic first, but it's either Watchmen or Dark Knight.
Those are one and two. That's
interesting.
Fair. Yeah.
Okay, so
let's see, Andy.
So I have the other ones I had were...
let's go down, so two.
So two was Iron Man.
Fair. That's actually...
It's like, I feel very commercial saying this, but when you have a lot of money behind it, you can actually make something that's more...
And it's a fun movie, I mean.
Iron Man was...
they got the character...
Was the number six for me. I'm pulling it down now.
High five.
I did. Then V for Vendetta.
You liked that movie?
I liked V for Vendetta.
Wow, I hated it.
Yeah,
especially after reading the book, too.
It slapped you too hard in the face with his message. That was my problem with it. It was like, terrorism! Terror! Terror! Look, terror!
It could also just be, I don't like the Wachowski brothers.
Yeah. It's possible. Yeah. Maybe I'm just numb to them. And then Spider-Man 2.
Ooh, very good.
Very good.
So, I didn't really prepare a five. I was just going to go with a number one. But if we were going to count down from five to number one, let's hope that... I get this correct in my order.
My number 5 would have been Spider-Man 2. My number 4 would have been Ghost World. My number 3, The Dark Knight. My number 2, Iron Man. And number 1 is Hellboy.
Huh.
Now,
that was my number 6.
I'm saying it as...
Oh, no, everybody's copying me
I'm saying this as, not that the movie itself was good, but the adaptation of the look and feel of the comic to the movie was
true.
Very good. I think Guillermo del Toro understands what he's working with. And especially the makeup being fantastic by Ron Baker.
Like, and especially if you look at
how
the
many
comics. The comics are pretty simple looking. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very angular. Yeah. And a lot of the backgrounds are just whole shade of color and just some shadows. And he actually managed to capture that pretty well in that whole real form. So Dom, let's get your countdown.
Countdown, okay.
Is it going to be a lot of the
same
ones?
You can do a list or you can just do the number one.
Number 5 will be Ghost World because I do like what they did with that. And I'm a huge fan of Steve Buscemi.
And it also introduced the world to Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yeah, it did. Thank you, Ghost World. Number 4 would probably be the first Batman with Tim Burton.
Strong words.
Yeah.
With Dark Knights ahead of that, right?
Of course.
Oh, no, you're giving away the ending.
Number 3 is Hellboy. I'm going to put Iron Man at number 2. Number 3 is Hellboy, the first Hellboy only. The second Hellboy was bad.
I actually enjoy the second Hellboy quite a bit.
The second Hellboy, the problem with that was that it was just so obvious and it dragged so much in the middle. Like, from the very beginning, you knew how it would end because they just threw it in your face. Like, hey, look, she's going to kill herself. And so when it got to that point, I actually shouted in the theater, finally! Because, I mean, he could have saved so much time in the movie just by just cutting herself in the first 5 minutes, you know?
But I wanted to see all the creatures and the world and everything.
Good.
The story itself is very basic. I love the world that he created, and they spent so much more time creating all the different monsters.
I liked the design and things like that, but when he went into the market, it was just such a...
Oh, I love the market.
I liked the look of the market. I hated what actually happened to the market.
Well,
Have you actually watched Pan's Labyrinth?
I have not watched Pan's
Labyrinth. You should watch Pan's Labyrinth.
I'll do that at some point. But anyway, so number 2...
I'm shocked you have not seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Number 2 is Iron Man.
Okay.
Because it's just so much fun, you know?
Yeah,
it captures sort of the 60s, 70s feel of the character, where he's just this prick with money who has, like, 3 margaritas before lunch.
But he also has a heart.
But he has a heart somewhere. It comes up every once in a while, and then he sort of hides it. And then number 1, obviously, is The Dark Knight.
Okay, I was waiting. I was like, man, I wonder if he's going to remember to say The Dark Knight before Tim Burton's Batman.
Okay, here's I'll say this about why I think Watchmen was up there with Dark Knight.
Yeah, I mean, this was before Watchmen. Watchmen is probably right around the Iron Man level for me.
Really? But I don't even have Watchmen on my top 5.
No, I would.
But, okay, I'll explain why, which is... The Batman it's kind of like what Dom was saying about Hellboy 2, in that basically the whole point of the movie is Batman is chasing the Joker. You know, eventually he's going to catch him, and the whole movie is really geared towards that. It's a really fun ride, and it's incredibly well made, but yet you know what's going to happen, and you're just waiting for it to happen. As I was watching Watchmen, I sat there not knowing what was going to happen, and I really liked that, and I really enjoyed the fact that there's so many different directions that are actually integral to the end game of the plot. And that's why it's up there for me. And also, I'd like to throw this out there because...
Are you adding a number 7 now?
It's more like,
is it Captain America?
It's more like number 8. It's more like number 8, which is Rocketeer.
Rocketeer!
Kevin,
dang it!
How did you miss the Rocketeer?
That's in my top 10 as well.
Shove everyone back and put Rocketeer at number 2. Shove everyone back beyond that. Oh my god, we should have talked about this before we recorded.
I mean,
yes, Rocketeer is like one of my most favorite characters in movies and comics
I cannot believe
I forgot.
Remember at Comic-Con when we had the Rocketeer helmet and I put it on?
Yes,
it was like,
and it was $300, and I was like, hey, that's a cool helmet.
Yeah, and I was
$300,
like, hey, we can both get these, and then we can be nerds together.
Oh, the Rocketeer. I'm so glad now that you made it.
The thing is that it's a really good movie,
that probably could be on my list if I remembered it was a comic book Because I never knew it was a comic book.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean,
at that point, I might as well just say the DuckTales.
They're
movie.
Actually reprinting the comic book for wow. Rocketeer wow. this year.
Okay.
They're going to do a hardcover with brand new, with redone color and everything.
I'm interested in that.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I first saw the movie in theaters because my brother was a fan of the comics.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right. That wraps up this very, very long, pretty much Watchmen episode. Zack Snyder, we talked about you too.
We talked about him.
All right. All right. You can find us online at www.s-words-podcast.com or send us any comments, emails, questions, feedback, anything to feedback@s-words-podcast.com. Lead us off on the quote sound off, Mr. Dom.
Solid joke.
Tall order.
Pineapple.
You know, I'm good with weapons.
March 8th, Dom's journal.
I'm My here. City screams.
I say no.
I'm Batman.
I'm the spirit.
Batman's journal.
Spirit's journal. I met a darkie today. He was nice.
Manhattan's crotch.